Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Denabuttele Sayam Pukadamayam Nidati Sapanantikam Pancha Kapudu Vyascha Kriva Sindhu Vaibhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama. In the previous chapters, we heard Maitreya Muni answer the questions of Vidura about the Lord's dealing with the material energy. And we heard how the Lord Himself was all that existed in the beginning. And from Him, all was expanded. And eventually we heard about the creation of the universal form. Then at the end of the last chapter, chapter 6, entitled The Creation of the Universal Form, we heard about that universal form and how amazing it actually is, because all the living entities in their different statuses of life, all the higher, middle, and lower planetary systems, they're all situated on the universal form, as well as the demigods, the Adidaivaka Purush, all the demigods who facilitate the senses of the living entities working by their being situated on the universal form. The senses of the living entity works in a corresponding fashion. So after describing the amazing position of the universal form, Maitreya Muni concluded in several verses just at the end of the chapter by saying, this form, or the Lord rather, is so inconceivable and so powerful that no one can describe Him actually in full. No one can know Him in full. And I have just, despite my inability to understand Him fully, I've described Him according to my own ability in order to purify my tongue. Because the tongue must always say something. And unless it says something about Krishna, it will say something about something of the modes of material nature, which entangles us further. So Maitreya Muni said that I'm speaking this for my own purification, whatever I have understood. And all ultimately one can do when it comes to the Lord is offer one's humble obeisances, because He is so great. Then, because that more or less answered the questions that Vidura had just asked about the Lord's dealing with the material energy and how He does it and the situation of the living entities. So Vidura asked some more questions, because these, what Maitreya has said has brought up some questions in his mind. So in chapter 7, Vidura begins to question very sweetly Maitreya Muni. And he asks three questions in the first six verses. He asks three questions. In texts 2, 3, and 4, he asks about the Lord's dealing with the material energy. And is it possible, or how is it that He's dealing with the material energy? Does He somehow or another become under the influence of the material energy in His dealings? And then in the second question, he asks about the living entities. In one sense, a similar question. is how are the living entities who are of pure consciousness, how are they somehow or another entangled in this material energy? How can something that is essentially pure become engaged in ignorance? And the third question that he asks is, if the Lord is in everyone's heart, and the Lord is in everyone's heart, and he is like the father of all living entities, and he's all powerful, and yet we see that the living entities are suffering so much. So how is it possible that the living entities are suffering when their dearmost, all-powerful, well-wishing Lord, friend, is right with them in the heart? How is it possible that they're suffering in this way? So in this way, these three questions are asked. And then in the following text, beginning around text 8 to text 14, Maitreya Muni will answer the questions. So we'll go over them in a little more detail, the questions one by one. So in text 2, in text 1, Vidura begins his questioning, or his, that he's asking questions is explained. And then in text 2 and 3 and 4, the Lord's dealing with the material world is inquired upon by Vidura. So in text 2, Vidura says, O great Brahmana, who is he speaking to? Maitreya, Rishi. O great Brahmana, since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the complete spiritual whole, maybe we can make this a little lower, and is unchangeable, how is he connected with the material modes of nature and their activities? Because the concept of the Supreme Lord means that he includes everything. So something that is everything cannot change. It cannot diminish. It cannot transform. It cannot increase in that sense. So how is it possible that the Lord, if he's connected with material modes of nature, which do change, how is it, and if he's the absolute truth, and he is none different from those modes of material nature, how is it that he is the absolute truth if there's change in his nature involved? And then further, if one answers that this is his pastime, how do the activities of the unchangeable take place and exhibit qualities without the modes of material nature? So if this is his activity in the modes of material nature, what are his activities outside of the modes of material nature? So basically, even though there's technical philosophy in there about the nature of the absolute and the unchanging nature of the absolute and transformation, and it's some different sampradayas have different opinions about this. The difference between the Nimbarka sampradaya, and which is Veda Veda, and Mahaprabhu's philosophy of Achintya Veda Veda Prakash, is that they say that the Lord is transformed, and we say that the Lord's, Mahaprabhu said, and we also naturally say, that it is not the Lord who is transformed, but the transformation of his energies. So even though if we're not deep, big philosophers, these aren't the most pressing points in our life, it's actually very important. But in the simplest way to understand this, it is understanding or questioning, the question that Vidura is asking is whether or not the Lord becomes under the sway of his material energy, Because we heard in the last chapter how he enters into the material world. He enters into it in some sense as Garbhadaksha Vishnu, as Mahavishnu, Karanadaksha Vishnu, as Kiradaksha Vishnu. So if he's in the material world, if he's dealing with the material energy, if everything is expanded from him, including the material world, and everything is changing and permutating, so he must be affected by this. So that's the question. So how is it that he's not affected by it? Is he affected by it? So Prabhupada explains in his purport, about midway through the purport, a juggler or magician displays many wonders with his acts and arts. He can become a cow by his magical tactics. And yet, he is not that cow. But at the same time, the cow displayed by the magician is not different from him. Similarly, the material potency is not different from the Lord because it is an emanation from him. But at the same time, the manifestation of potency is not the Supreme Lord. The Lord, like the sun, expands its energy. The sun expands its energy of heat and light. But yet, although one cannot say that the heat and light is not the sun, one can also not say that it is the sun. Because we could say in the daytime that the sun is in the room, meaning the sunlight is in the room, but we don't mean the sun is in the room. If the sun was in the room, the sun itself was in the room, we would all burn up instantaneously. So there is a difference simultaneously and a sameness between the energy and the energetic. So the Lord's transcendental knowledge and potency always remains the same. They do not change, even when displayed in the material world. That is the Lord's personal energy and knowledge. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord descends on the earth by his own internal potency, and therefore there is no question of his becoming materially contaminated, changed, or otherwise affected by the modes of material nature. Which is a very important point, because the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, or the Mayavadis, they say that when the Supreme Lord enters the world, he adopts a form and is controlled by the material energy of the mode of goodness. This is the Mayavad philosophy. And that they say that the impersonal Lord, the Absolute, when he comes to the material world and controlled by goodness, the mode of goodness, under the control of the material energy, then he is known as the Ishvara. And then they say that the parts of the Lord, when they come in the material world, they are known as jiva. They are controlled by the other modes of material nature and they become known as jiva. But ultimately they say that the jiva and the Lord are the same. So this verse, Vidura's question is specifically about this Mayavad philosophy. Is it that the Lord becomes changed when he enters the material world? Because we've just heard how he creates the material world. Now these foundational concepts are essential for someone to understand before he hears about the wonderful pastimes of Krishna in the 10th canto in Vrindavan. Or he even hears about the wonderful pastimes of the Lord in the 7th canto when Lord Nrisingadev comes and rips apart Haranyakashipu to protect Prahlad, the boy devotee. Is he angry? That means he's in the mode of ignorance? No, this is all transcendental, all pastime. And he takes this pastime, he takes this energy, knowledge, and potency with him, even when he seemingly enters the material world. He actually remains aloof from the material world, meaning he is not touched by the modes of material nature. So this is the point that's being made. So the question actually continues, even though Prabhupada in his purport and we've spoken about the answer. Text 3. Boys are enthusiastic to play with other boys, all with various diversions, because they are encouraged by desires. But there is no possibility of such desires for the Lord, because he is self-satisfied and detached from everything at all times. By his self-sheltered potency of the three modes of material nature, the Lord has caused the creation of this universe. By her, he maintains the creation and conversely dissolves it again and again. So the question that he's following here with is, again, about the Lord and his dealing with the material energies. He's asking, why is it that the Lord has done this, created the material world? Because if one does something, like a child does something, he's playing with this friend and with that friend. Why? Because he has a desire. And when one has a desire, it means that he has a desire that's unfulfilled. And when one has a desire that's unfulfilled, that means he's lacking something. But how is it possible that the Lord to be lacking something, because he's the absolute truth? So if he's not lacking something, why has he created the material world? It's not for his desire, because he has no desire that's unfulfilled. So why has he created the material world? Is it like a boy playing or something like that? He creates it, maintains it, dissolves it. So, of course, we know that the answer to this, and Prabhupada explains it very nicely in the fourth purport. He makes a very nice, wonderful point in the third purport, where he explains that actually, when Krishna creates the material world, he's not creating something external of himself. It's just Krishna dealing with his own energies. So it is not satisfying a lack. It is all within the realm of himself. So even in his doing this, he still is self-satisfied, because he's self-satisfied. He's satisfying himself, by his own energy. So Prabhupada explains that in the third verse. And in the fourth verse, he explains and really answers the question that why the Lord does create the material world. It is not for his own pleasure, but it is to help the conditioned living entities who are in illusion, and they consider themselves part of the material world, and he wants to rescue them. So for them, for their benefit, out of his compassion, the material world is manifest. So then it goes, so that first question in those three verses has to do with the Lord and his dealings with the material energy. And again, this is very important, because these concepts have to be firmly, firmly in place. Otherwise, when we hear about Krishna's playing with the cows, walking around in the pasturing ground without any shoes on, when he's crying and rubbing his eyes when Mother Yasoda chastises him, when he's dancing in the moonlight with the gopis, one will think that these are activities motivated by the same things that motivate us, material desires, a lack. But no. So the concept of the Lord being absolute and yet being a person and yet having desires and yet having activities, these have to be put into place very strongly. So then, now the next question has to do with the living entities and their dealing with the material world. How is it possible that a pure soul can get covered? And the specific question, we'll read the verse. The pure soul is pure consciousness, and he is never out of consciousness, either due to circumstances, time, situations, dreams, or other causes. How then does he become engaged in nescience? So the question is that if the living entity, and we see this even in our conditioned life, we're conscious of the past, we're conscious of the present, and we can predict the future. So the pure soul must also be able to do these things. So how is it possible that the soul cannot remember his own identity then, who he is? How is that possible? That's the question. How is it possible that he's covered and forgotten who he is? So, Prabhupada explains in the purport, in the last third of the purport, the difference between the Lord and the living entity. Because the Lord, being infinitely powerful, cannot get covered by his own energy. But the living entities, being tiny, can get covered by the Lord's energy. So Prabhupada explains. The potent can exhibit many potencies, but the potency cannot equal the potent at any stage. Very simple and wonderful point. Because an energy comes from the energetic. Its source is the energetic. That which is produced cannot be greater than that which produces it. Just like if I have a certain amount of money, can I give you a certain amount of money out of the amount that I have that will allow you to have more money than I have? Than I started with? Can I give you more money than I started with? Can you be richer than I started with? No, obviously not. So the potent cannot be overwhelmed by the potency. But one potency may be overcome by another potency. If I give someone one amount of money and another person another amount of money, one of the people may have more than the other. So similarly, the Maya Shakti of Krishna, the Maya potency of Krishna, has the ability to overpower the Jiva Shakti. The Jiva potency, or the Chetragya Shakti of the Lord, has the tendency to be overpowered by the external potency, Avidya Karma Sangya. That's from the Vishnu Purana verse. And in this way, he is placed in the awkward circumstance of material existence. The living entity cannot be forgetful of his real identity unless influenced by the Avidya potency. Because the living entity is prone to the influence of the Avidya potency, he can never equal the Supreme Potent. And then the third question. So the first question had to do with the Lord and his dealing with the material energy. The second has to do with the living entity and how is it possible that he becomes overpowered. And the third question is, the Lord as the super soul is situated in every living being's heart. Why then do the living entities' activities result in misfortune and misery? And Prabhupada explains in the purport, the Lord is the father and protector of all of every living entity. And he is known as the Buddha-brit, or the maintainer of the living entities. Why then should the living entity be subjected to so many sufferings and misfortunes? It should not be so, but actually we see that it happens everywhere. The question is therefore put forward by Vidura for solution. How is it possible that the all-powerful, most kind, magnificent, magnanimous, compassionate, Supreme Lord is in right with the living entity, and he loves the living entity as a father loves a child? How is it, why does the living entity suffer in that way? So good questions. So then he says very humbly, Vidura, after asking these questions, these basically three questions in six verses, he says, O great and learned one, O Maitreya, my mind is greatly illusioned by the distress of this nescience, of this ignorance, and I therefore request you to clear it up. So Sukadev Goswami describes how Maitreya reacts to these questions. So he says, O King, being thus agitated by the inquisitive Vidura, Maitreya at first seemed astonished because his questions are so intricate, complex, and seemingly contradictory. But then he replied to him, without hesitation, since he was fully God-conscious. And then here the description in five verses, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, six verses. Description of Maitreya's answer. Certain conditioned souls, this is text 9, put forward the theory that the Supreme Brahman, or the Personality of Godhead, is overcome by illusion, that the Supreme Absolute Truth does enter into the material world and does become covered by the illusory energy. And sometimes we may think, how is it possible that anyone believes that? But yet, it is a fact that so many people do believe that. I've read commentaries with of the Ramayana where it says that Lord Rama is acting as a kshatriya, which means he's influenced by the mode of passion, which shows how powerful the modes of material nature are. That even when God comes to the material world, he is placed under their control. It's as foolish as thinking when the king is visiting the prison house, that because he's in the realm of the prison house, that he's under the control of the warden of the prison. No, he's the king. The warden is always under his control. But yet, he's saying certain conditioned souls, certain people who are under the influence of Maya, whose knowledge is not full, put forward the theory that the Supreme Brahman, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is overcome by illusion, or Maya. And at the same time, they maintain that he's unconditioned, uncontrolled. This is against all logic. So, Prabhupada explains in the purport. Very nice purports. He uses Vishwanath Chakravarti and Jiva Goswami's, he calls a nice example. Although the sun is all light, the clouds, darkness, and snowfall are all part and parcel of the sun. Without the sun, there is no possibility of the skies being overcast with clouds or darkness, nor can there be snowfall on the earth. Although life is sustained by the sun, life is also disturbed by the darkness and snowfall produced by the sun. But it is also a fact that the sun itself is never overcome by darkness, clouds, or snowfall. The sun is far, far away from such disturbance. It means Krishna produces the ignorance that covers the eyes of the living entity, but he himself becomes covered, like the sun never becomes covered by a cloud. Prabhupada continues. According to Vishnu Purana, Bhagavad Gita, and all other Vedic literatures, the living entities are generated from the tatastha energy of the Lord. And thus, they are always the energy of the Lord and are not the energetic. So again, fighting with this Mayavad philosophy. Because if one has within his consciousness this Mayavad philosophy, bhakti will never come. So, Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Prabhupada following in the footsteps of Jiva Goswami and Prabhupada following in the footsteps of his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, were always meticulous, very careful and heavy about defeating and fighting with this Mayavad philosophy. Sometimes Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would see a Mayavadi walking across on the other side of the street, minding his own business. And he would cross the street just to chastise him and say, why are you cheating the people with this Mayavad philosophy? So the living entities are the tatastha energy of the Lord, and thus they are always the energy of the Lord and are not the energetic. The living entities are like the sun's rays. Although, as explained above, there is no qualitative difference between the sun and its rays, the sun's rays are sometimes overpowered by another energy of the sun, namely by the clouds or by the snowfall. Similarly, although the living entities are qualitatively one with the superior energy of the Lord, they have the tendency to be overpowered by the inferior material energy. In the Vedic hymns, it is said that the living entities are like sparks of a fire. The sparks of a fire also are fire. But the burning potency of the spark is different from that of the original fire. When the sparks fly out of touch with the original fire, they come under the influence of the non-fiery atmosphere. Thus, they maintain the potency to be again one with the fire as sparks, but not as the original fire. The sparks can everlastingly remain within the original fire as its parts and parcels. But the moment the sparks become separated from the original fire, their misfortunes and miseries begin. The clear conclusion is that the Supreme Lord, who is the original fire, is never overpowered. But the infinitesimal sparks, what does infinitesimal mean? You know? Very, very, very tiny. Insignificantly, immeasurably tiny. So the infinitesimal sparks of the fire can become overpowered by the illusory energy of Maya. It means the souls. Jesus. It is a most ludicrous, foolish argument to say that the Supreme Lord is overpowered by his own material energy. So Maitreya Muni considers this. He has no factual background like a man who dreams that he sees his head cut off. Just like a man who dreams that he sees his head cut off. The comparison between the living entity who does not accept his relationship with Krishna is like a living entity who dreams he sees his head cut off. Because one can only dream that he sees his head cut off. One cannot actually see his head being cut off. It is not possible. It is a contradiction. With what will we see that our head has been cut off? Our two eyes will have been cut off. Our seeing potency will be lost. So it's contradictory to say that I've seen my head being cut off. It can only be done in a dream, an illusion. It is a contradiction. So similarly, in a similar way, the living entity can dream that he is separate from Krishna, but it is impossible actually for him to exist separately from Krishna. It is contradictory. So the living entity becomes bewildered and becomes distressed by his self-identity, but actually he's just dreaming that he doesn't know who he is. Actually, he's always Krishna's part and parcel. So this is the answer to the question about the living entity and how is he overpowered, how can the pure living entity become contaminated? And the answer is, he can't become contaminated any more than a person can see his head being cut off. But he can dream. He can dream that he is no longer with Krishna, that he has an independent existence. That he is the Lord of all he surveys, and he will do this, and he will do that, and he will become happy separate from Krishna. Just dreaming. Illusion. Forgetfulness. But not actually changing the situation of his pure consciousness. Or his connection with Krishna, with his pure consciousness. Prabhupada at the end of the purport explains the conclusion of this point. The conclusion is that a living entity deprived of his eternal transcendental service to the Lord becomes illusioned in many ways. Even in his conditional life, he is the eternal servant of the Lord. His servitude under the spell of illusory Maya is also a manifestation of his eternal condition of service. Because he has rebelled against the service of the Lord, he is therefore put in the service of the Maya. He is still serving, but in a perverted manner. So we still serve Krishna, but we don't serve him directly anymore because of the dream. When he wants to get out of service under material bondage, he next desires to become one with the Lord, which is another illusion. This is another illusion, Prabhupada says. The best course, therefore, is to surrender unto the Lord and thus get rid of the illusory Maya for good. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Daivyeshu Gunamayi Mama Maya Dvatiya Mamedite Papadente Mayam Vitam Tarantite. Prabhupada explained early in the purport, actually, there is no bondage or misery for the living entity, nor does he ever lose his pure knowledge. In his pure consciousness, when he thinks a little seriously about his position, he can understand that he is eternally subordinate to the mercy of the Supreme, and that his attempt to become one with the Supreme is a false illusion. Now he gives, Maitreya Muni gives an example, a nice example. As the moon reflected on water appears to the seer, the person who's looking, when the moon is on the water, the moon appears to the seer, the person who is looking, to tremble. Due to being associated with the quality of the water. So the self associated with matter appears to be qualified as matter. As the moon reflected on the water, due to its association with the water, it appears to be trembling, but actually the moon isn't trembling. So similarly, the living entity in association with matter appears to be suffering. But actually, he is not. So we are always quivering and taking on the qualities of matter, just like the moon appears to be taking on the qualities of water. We are quivering and shaking like matter, changing, but we are eternal. But actually, we appear to be happening to us due to our illusion and dreaming, but actually it is not happening at all. It is the reflection that is quivering. In text 12, but that misconception of self-identity can be diminished. Now, he's moving. And then by saying this, in the 12, 13, and 14, he's going to explain the process of the living entity to get out of the illusion. So he stops his quivering, taking the qualities of matter, and he regains his actual consciousness, and he takes advantage of the supersoul actually being in his heart. So he's answered both the questions about how does the living entity entangled, the pure living entity entangled in the material world, and how can he be suffering so much in the presence of the Supersoul. He's answered both those questions with one answer, which is very, very clever and wonderful to do, by saying that actually the living entity is not suffering, but he's dreaming that he's suffering. So then the next question was, that is obvious, so the next thing we want to hear is, how does he awaken from this dream that causes him so much difficulty? So now in these 12, 13, and 14, this is answered. I'm going to read the three verses, and then we'll read parts of the purports. But that misconception of self-identity, not knowing who we are, can be diminished gradually by the mercy of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, through the process of devotional service to the Lord in the mode of detachment. When the senses are satisfied in the seer supersoul, when the senses of the living entity no longer are trying to grasp the material world and trying to squeeze enjoyment and pleasure out of it, but are satisfied in the supersoul, when the senses have turned to Krishna, the personality of Godhead, and they merge in Him, the senses are immersed in Him, all miseries are completely vanquished, as after a sound sleep. And the final verse of this. How to do this? How to turn from Maya to Krishna? Devotional service, engaging one's senses fully in Krishna. And text 14 completes the concept. Simply by chanting and hearing of the transcendental name, form, etc. of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one can achieve the cessation, the stopping of unlimited miserable conditions. Therefore, what to speak of those who have attained attraction for serving the flavor of the dust of the Lord's lotus feet? So just by chanting and hearing, what to speak of someone who has actually attained attraction for Krishna? So just by chanting and hearing, the miseries go. What to speak of those who actually have who are advanced in Krishna consciousness. So we'll read some parts of the purports from these three verses. So this is the process. The process of devotional service, engaging the senses in Krishna service, absorbing them in Krishna service, and by chanting and hearing about Krishna, and ultimately by becoming attracted. Prabhupada says in the purport to 12, the development of knowledge for the purpose of knowing everything without rendering devotional service is considered fruitless labor, and one cannot get the desired result by such a labor of love. Just by knowing that one is not one's body, it doesn't bring the result of the cessation, the stoppage of miseries. Lord Vasudeva is pleased by devotional service only, and thus his mercy is realized by association with pure devotees of the Lord. Pure devotees of the Lord are transcendental to all material desires, including the desire for the results of fruitive activities and philosophical speculation. If one wants to acquire the mercy of the Lord, he has to associate with pure devotees. Such association alone can by degree release one from the quivering elements. It transfers, such association transfers one's consciousness from the realm of matter and illusion to the realm of Krishna's pure devotion. So that's Krishna Bhakti Janma Mula Hoya Sarasangi. Prema Bhakti Janma Teno Purnamukhya Anga. This is the most important aspect of devotional service association with pure devotees. And then on to the 13th verse where Maitreya described the process of absorbing one's senses in Krishna, and Prabhupada explains in the purport, artificially stopping a mischievous child is not the real remedy. The child must be given some better engagement so that he'll automatically stop causing mischief. In the same way, the mischievous activities of the senses can be stopped only by better engagement in relation with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the eyes are engaged in seeing the beautiful form of the Lord, the tongue engaged in tasting prasad or remnants of foodstuffs offered to the Lord, the ears are engaged in hearing His glories, the hands are engaged in cleaning the temple of the Lord, the legs engaged in visiting His temples, or when all the senses are engaged in transcendental variegatedness, then only can the transcendental senses become satiated and eternally free from material engagement. The Lord is the Supersoul residing in everyone's heart, and as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the transcendental world, far beyond the material creation, is the seer of all our activities. Our activities must be so transcendentally saturated. That means that our activities must, our minds must be absorbed as we are performing activities, absorbed in the transcendental, the directly, the sarup siddhivakti items, such as hearing and chanting, remembering Krishna. The mind has to become saturated in these things, and that will saturate the activities. So our activities must be so transcendentally saturated that the Lord will be kind enough to look upon us favorably and engage us in His transcendental service. Then only can the senses be satisfied completely and be no longer troubled by material attraction. And in the last purport, which describes that just chanting and hearing gets rid of misery, is what to speak of becoming attracted to Krishna. We'll read the entire purport. Two different methods for controlling the material senses are recommended in the Vedic scriptural wisdom. One of them is the process of jnana, or the path of philosophical understanding of the Supreme, Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. The other is that of direct engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Of these two most popular methods, the path of devotional service is recommended here as the best, because one on the path of devotional service does not have to wait for the attainment of the fruitive results of pious activities or for the results of knowledge. The two stages of executing devotional service are, first, so one starts getting the result of devotional service before one gets to the final platform, which is different when one is performing either fruit of activities or jnana, or the process of knowledge. So now Prabhupada is going to explain the two stages of devotional service. First, the stage of practicing devotional service, sadhana bhakti, with our present senses under the regulations of the recognized scriptures. And second, attaining sincere attachment for serving the particles of the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. The first stage is called sadhana bhakti, or devotional service for the neophyte, which is rendered under the direction of a pure devotee. And the second stage is called raga bhakti, in which the mature devotee automatically takes to the various services of the Lord out of sincere attachment. The great sage Maitreya now gives the final answer to all the questions of Vidura. Devotional service to the Lord is the ultimate means to mitigate, to stop all the miserable conditions of material existence. The path of knowledge or that of mystic gymnastics may be adopted as a means for the purpose, but unless mixed with bhakti or devotional service, they are unable to award the desired result. By practicing sadhana bhakti, one may gradually rise to the point of raga bhakti, and by performing raga bhakti in loving transcendental service, one can even control the Supreme Powerful Lord. So again, the three questions that Vidura asked about the Lord's dealing with the material energy, about the souls becoming, the pure souls becomes contaminated by Maya. How is that possible? And third, how is it possible that the living entity has the super soul within its heart? How is it possible that he is in so much misery? So Maitreya answered the questions one after another, saying the Lord is never under the control of his material energy, but the living entities come under the control of the material energy. The potency cannot overpower the potent. the source of the energy. The sunlight cannot overpower the sun. The clouds cannot overpower the sun. But they can't cover the vision. The clouds can cover the vision of the tiny souls. So the souls cannot see the sun. And what is the... And the soul, how is he experiencing so much misery? Just in illusion, because of being covered by the material energy. He is forgotten. But he is forgotten, but his actual knowledge and pure consciousness is not adulterated or mixed or impure. He is just forgotten. And the process of removing the covering, the forgetfulness of waking him up, is devotional service in detachment. It removes the miseries, and gradually, by the process of hearing and chanting, one makes advancement and develops attachment to Krishna and becomes an advanced devotee and goes back to the spiritual world. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments? What text is that? Prabhupada explains in the purport. He had no reason to be astonished by the contradictory questions by Vidura. In other words, Vidura's questions were so difficult to answer because they seemingly pointed out contradictions, that the Lord is dealing with the material energy. That means he's dealing with it. So therefore he must be touched by it, and the living and the other questions as well. Therefore, although as a devotee he externally expressed surprise, as if he did not know how to reply to those questions. But he immediately became perfectly settled and properly replied to Vidura. So that's the explanation that Prabhupada gives. And by Krishna's grace, the devotee, such an exalted devotee, is able to answer every question by Krishna's grace. Although a devotee may apparently express himself to be ignorant, he is full of knowledge in every intricate matter. Srila Gokashodas Babaji was superficially illiterate, but yet, because he was in direct touch with Krishna, he was fully aware of everything, philosophical and all those. Is that right? Any other questions or comments? Yeah. Yeah, because if Krishna can't be surprised by something, his leelas would become very boring if he knew everything that was going on. So although he knows everything, he becomes compressed in the particular leela. His consciousness becomes compressed at the same time he knows everything. Because if he knew what was going to happen next all the time, then the leela would not be exciting for him. But then you say, if he doesn't know what's happening next, then how is he God? So these inconceivably contradictory things are reconciled in Krishna. By the mercy of Yogamaya, he's both Mugdhata and Sarvajna at the same time. He knows everything. And he's compressed in consciousness. Yes, very difficult. We can't understand. This is the inconceivably powerful Lord. He allows himself, as you say, to be surprised by his own potency. Any other questions or comments? when Krishna saw the cowherd boys enter into the mouth of Agasura, Prabhupada explains in the Krishna book, he himself was surprised at how wonderful the energy works. His own Leela Shakti was working, Yogamaya was working. So how wonderful, what a wonderful arrangement Krishna has made, that the all-knowing, all-powerful Lord also becomes surprised by how things work out. Of what?
Of the Murad Raman. That fought for 1,000 years with Krishna. And then Krishna got tired. He fell asleep.
And he what?
Fell asleep.
He fell asleep?
Yes. He fell asleep. He felt tired fighting for 1,000 years. And then the demon thought, now it is my chance. He's tired. But since this Yogamaya Shakti is always ever vigilant, so she just cut his head off. And then Krishna woke up to realize that there is this more important physical thing. That's how it is Radha. So it's rather contradictory that he falls asleep and found him in the image of his potency. Wakes up,
This is the absolute truth, because that means he's doing it himself anyway.
In a different form, he's doing it.
Yeah. And how one form. Yeah. It's wonderful. That's why he's the Supreme Lord.
And he was surprised that, you know, how it happened.
Also, when Krishna looks polished stone and sees his own reflection, he thinks, who is this beautiful person? So beautiful, it's attracting me. He's even astounded by his own beauty. Mysterious? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada.